part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
We could start this podcast right now. My name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. And with me on the line is a very talented writer, comic creator, someone who I've become a fan of because he introduced me to his book, The Amazing World of, I hope I do not mispronounce this, Aldous Spark. Right?
Perfect. Perfect.
Yes. Actually, the title is Aldous Spark, Meddler in History and Other Unsavory Affairs, which was a book that I reviewed on my site a long time ago. And I think I neglected having you on the podcast, but your name is Andrew Maxwell, correct?
That's correct. Yeah,
I
glad to be here.
I pronounced it correctly. I got it right. Yeah. It's hard to mess that one up, I think.
I got two first names, so we're getting good.
You're like Steve Rogers or Clark Kent. There you go.
There we go.
Yeah, I used to have a friend in high school who hated that. He's like, "Oh, I hate it when comic book characters have two first names." And I'm like, "No, that's kind of cool. I like it." But it's sort of an interesting little thing that they would do in comics. But I did really enjoy The Amazing World of Aldous Spark. And I keep calling it The Amazing World. Why do? Oh, because that is the title of the review that I made. I'm looking at my website, Part-Time Fanboy, and I called it The Amazing World of Aldous Spark. But the actual title is Aldous Spark, Meddler in History and Other Unsavory Affairs. It was a great book, and I neglected having you on the podcast that first time around, but now you have a new project, which by the time this podcast goes up, you will have a Kickstarter going, correct?
Yeah, it's going live tomorrow, July 10th.
July 10th. And so this will probably go up Wednesday, so we will be like one day into your Kickstarter. And this is another great comic read. I really enjoyed it. I just reread it yesterday again, you know, just to like refamiliarize myself with it. And I'm just, I'm pretty blown away because you are a consistently decent writer, sir.
Well, thank you. I'm hoping that's what the general consensus is when people read it. But I really appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Yeah. So are these, because I think I had looked you up a while ago, or maybe when it was you, when I had reviewed Aldous Spark, and did you do a Kickstarter for that book as well?
Yeah. So basically the way I kind of make books is I write them and complete them, fully finish them just because, you know, as an avid Kickstarter backer myself, it always bugs me when you have to wait 2 years for the book to come out, because, you know, you get those 5 or 6 pages done for the Kickstarter, and then you're, you know, because I mean, just life happens. I know, you know, as an indie creator, so many things happen where things take forever to come out.
Yeah.
And so I always just like to have it done, and then I just use Kickstarter to fund the printing costs of it.
Yeah. Well, I guess let me ask you this. These are not like the only two Kickstarters you've done. It seems like you've done several, correct? You've made a or are these the only two? Am I mistaken in that?
I did Rum Row. I did two for Rum Row.
That's right. Okay.
And I did one for Spark, and then Laszlo will be launching tomorrow. So it'll be my technically my fourth one tomorrow.
So this new book is called The Bawdy Tales of Laszlo. Help me with the last name.
Kale.
Laszlo. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, so it is just Kale. Okay, I thought it was maybe Kalye or something fancy like that, but it's Laszlo Kale.
Yeah, I keep torturing you with long titles. I apologize.
No, it's great. I like it. It's very sort of, you know, alliterative or like a little bit of consonants in there. You know, it works in sort of like a fun sort of a comic book fantasy sort of way. But this one seems to be a little bit, at least visually, styled differently than Aldous Spark.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big departure in terms of, yeah, like art style was a big change. Genre was a big change. Tone, and even in terms of content, I mean, I would say Spark is definitely like in the PG-13 range. This is definitely the more adult side of things. Still very fun, or hopefully that's what it comes across. But yeah, it's a little more adult in this book.
Yeah, yeah. Aldous Spark was sort of like a steampunk sort of era adventure sort of thing. The art style was a little bit more, how can I say, like classically comic, or more like, you know what it reminded me a lot of? Are you aware of like cross-gen comics at all?
I didn't read comics till I was in like 20, 21 years old. Oh, so I know about that stuff in passing, and I've read Ruse, right? Like more recently, but I've heard that comparison, and that I've, you know, the little that I've read was really good. So I'm all for that.
Yeah, it's a really, me giving you a really good compliment, because Aldous Spark was very much reminding me of sort of like that cross-gen era of comics, where they were sort of doing things way outside of, you know, whatever superhero stuff was being done, and different sort of like genres. It was sort of like an mildly connected, interconnected sort of universe, but the art and the quality of the writing and everything on those books was really fantastic. And so if anyone's out there that remembers cross-gen, Aldous Spark was very much reminded me of that sort of thing. And it's just so interesting to me that you had only just recently started looking or reading that stuff, because in my mind, I would be like, oh, wow, this is very much inspired by that. But you weren't even aware of that existed when you had created that book.
Yeah, no, I just, like I said, I missed the boat on a ton of stuff. So I really started playing catch up with comics in general, and just kind of shotgunning a ton of titles. Once I got you know, into comics, I was hooked. I mean, and another thing is just, you grow up, you know, on the sidelines, and I remember watching the X-Men cartoon and Batman the Animated Series, but you think it's all superheroes. And then I remembered, you know, I even worked in a Barnes and Nobles for a little while, and they had a whole bunch of, you know, collected trade editions. Yeah. And so I could just go in there and read. And the one that kind of really got me going was Preacher. I was just, blown away. So there's just so much stuff out there. And then you look at the Fantagraphics stuff, and I'm a big genre guy, so I love all the Dark Horse and Image stuff. So, I mean, there's just so much out there, whatever you're into. So I really binge read a ton of stuff.
That's great. I mean, so you say you discovered comics, or you started getting into them when you're 21. How old are you now?
I'm 33. So I do have a little bit of time under my belt now, but yeah. I was a little late to the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so what at 21, was it just working in that bookstore where you discovered your first comics, or was it just like a friend snuck you some stuff, or was a cover of a Preacher trade paperback staring at you from the shelf and you were like, what is that? That looks ridiculous. I have to check that out. Is that what happened?
It was kind of like a handful of things. So I was working at Barnes and Nobles, and then I had a buddy that was working at a comic book shop. And it was almost like a drug dealer. Like, he was like, hey, check out these comics.
First taste is free.
Like, yeah, exactly. And then he gave me a handful of comics, and I just, you know, devoured them. And as a kid, I loved the principle, you know, like the concept of comics. I was a big, I used to draw all the time.
Oh, okay.
But my parents were just so strict. I give them a hard time now. They're great. But they were so strict. It was just what I could consume was, you know, they were just not having it. So
yeah, I hear you. I was in the same sort of boat. Yep, yep.
So yeah, so that kind of thing. I didn't read a ton of them, and then as I got older in college and all that stuff, it was like the perfect time. And there was just so much good stuff to read.
Yeah, yeah. What were some of the books? Do you remember, like, what some of the books that your friend gave you, or?
So he actually gave me, I remember he was giving me, was actually some superhero stuff, which is what I, you know, traditionally thought. But I remember reading a couple, there was the Black Panther run that was, what was it?
Like, Christopher Priest or something? Or?
No, it was the more recent, John Romita drew it for a little bit.
Yeah, I think that maybe Christopher Priest wrote that. Yeah, so that might be, I could be wrong, yeah.
But it was, I remember that, and then I remember Bendis's, had just started writing New Avengers, which was, you remember that where like Ronin and all that.
Yeah. I remember that. That was like sort of like when he brought Wolverine and Spider-Man and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, the writer of that Black Panther thing looks like it's Reginald Hudlin. So,
okay.
And John Romita. Oh, so yeah, you definitely got sucked into some superhero stuff like right off the bat.
Yeah. So I had that. And then I remember reading, finding Garth Ennis through Punisher Max, and then finding Preacher, and then that kind of opened the door to like just, oh, you can do anything in a comic, and it can be completely over the top and insane, and doesn't have to be superheroes, and so I just kind of went looking through all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like you sort of jumped in like when a sort of second renaissance was like beginning in comics, when people were starting to, or even the big companies were starting to, like maybe in their early to mid like 2000s were starting to like really try to do some crazy stuff, or like late 90s and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. And I remember I also started reading, listening to podcasts. I found out about podcasts too.
Oh, okay.
And I remember Word Balloon.
With
Suntress, and he interviewed all these writers, and I was just like, the level of craft and detail that goes into the stories, I was just like captivated. So I that was another thing that was happening kind of at the same time.
Yeah. No, that's really, yeah. Word Balloon. Oh, wow. I think that podcast must still be around. I mean, he's great. He's a great, John Suttress. He's a great podcaster. I love his show. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Like the growth of like all those comic book, podcasts and stuff were definitely something that would probably keep you in the hobby too. Like if you were into it, or if you were interested in discovering how they were created and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, because I've always been into creative things, and I was writing other stuff. It wasn't, I had no idea that I was ever going to write comics or try to write comics.
Uh-huh.
But with all that kind of stuff, there was the perfect storm, and I, you know, started dabbling, and making little 5-page stories and pitches, and thank God, you know, nothing ever happened because the pitches were really bad, and I'm glad that I can, kind of get my feet wet and start small and kind of build my way up.
So were you going around to conventions and trying to pitch to publishers and stuff like that?
I did that like two different occasions, like two different conventions, and I was like, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Which conventions?
Because I'm Southern California, so
yeah.
WonderCon.
Nice.
And what was the other? I think they were both WonderCon, but they used to be in the Bay Area, and then they had one. Then they moved down to Southern California.
They were in the Bay Area, and then something happened, like where the convention couldn't give them their space or was under construction, and then they moved it down to Anaheim. And then WonderCon. Yeah, that's right. Because I've gone to WonderCon like several years in a row. Yeah. I love WonderCon. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a blast. And I remember my buddy was going to film school at the time, and he had to make a documentary feature. And I was like, well, you know, let's try to make a documentary, and I could try to pitch some projects to publishers. And I'll think, hey, if they know we're making a documentary, maybe they'll give us a little more time of day to actually pitch to them. And, pretty much, and I was like, oh, we can John Madden it. I can look and see where I screwed up and what they respond to. And pretty much everybody just didn't answer at all. One publisher did. I don't know if I should mention. I don't want other people doing stupid things like I did. But they did respond, and I pitched. I got all this whole thing set up, and I went in to pitch it, and she was like, okay, well, why don't you email this to me, and I'll talk to you later. And it was like a 30-second ordeal that I had built up for this. But there was, and I did other stuff where you just, you know, cold call, just walk up to somebody and, you know, hey, how's it going? And give them your little pitch packet. And it's just the most awkward, worst thing.
Well, it's hard at conventions, even for me, like podcasts, approaching people for interviews. I start to realize really quickly is like, while you're at the convention, people are sort of more interested in selling their own thing than listening to you about your thing. You know what I mean? And or like engaging with as high a profile a person as they can. You know what I mean? That's sort of like what conventions have sort of become to a certain extent. And I totally get it. Like it's you're trying to drop off your pitch packet and like somebody's trying to, you know, book a meeting with the new hot thing in comics. And they're like, yeah, whatever, kid. Or
yeah, you know, exactly.
Yeah. People are so busy with like their own thing. And then, you know, so I've gotten to the point like where, like with me for interviews, I do get blown off a lot. And then the other thing too, is like at that point, it's just like, here's my card, you know, whether you want to talk or not, you know, just draw me a line. And people do get in touch with me, but you know, other people, they're just too busy or they forget, or, you know, they're right in the middle of con season. So yeah, I can see how hard it must be to just like try and pitch an actual comics project, you know, at a convention where like I'm sure like so many other people want their time as well, right?
Oh yeah, I'm sure I was like the 20th or 30th guy doing that.
So what is it that makes you go? Because like I've said, you've put together so far, like Aldous Spark was like one of the better things that I've read, you know, and I think I even said it in the review that like every once in a while you get sent something, because I do get sent like PDFs every once in a while, and I don't have time to like read everything or look at everything. But it was one of the ones that I was like, okay, let me open this. And I opened it and I was like, oh, wait a minute, like just visually, okay? So like the artwork like sucked me in, and then I started reading it and I was like, oh, this is really good. So what for you becomes the process of like, damn it, I'm just gonna go make my own thing, and not only just make my own thing, but get it to the point of like where it's actually really good?
Well, one of the things is because you know, I'm a small time nobody, and there is so many things out there where it's like, part of it is whether you like my write, you may hate my writing or the idea, but at least the books, I think production wise are up there, I think can hold their own. And I think that's one of the, cause there's so many reasons that people are looking to put your book down. And so I really just try to find the best collaborators that I can.
And how are you doing that?
I mean, it's kind of varied. So initially, you know, with the first couple projects, it was going on forums, you know, putting out ads, stuff like that. But I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff where, you know, you get blown off, or you pay something and it doesn't get finished, or you sign a contract and then that person doesn't hold their side of the bargain. I mean, there's all that kind of stuff that happens, but it's got a little bit better as we go on. And I've found it's easier once you have finished product to show. Because I mean, I get it. Like, it takes me a week to write a script, and it takes an artist at least a month to draw a script, right?
So if it's they're like, doing it all the time, if that's like their whole day, yeah.
So I mean, I get it. Like, you know, you're trying, you want the most for your time. You want to make sure that this book is going to get seen. And if there's, you know, a small time nobody, I get it. What are you going to compete with? So, but it's definitely helped, so having finished product, and showing that to other artists. And then, I mean, with Laszlo, that one, that's been the smoothest process I've had. I mean, he's in Serbia, but his communication, I mean, I talk to him multiple times in a day. I mean, easy.
You're talking about the artist at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And his name is?
Goran. I'm going to butcher his last name.
Gligovic?
Gligovic, actually.
Oh, Gligovic, yes. Okay,
sir. Thank you what he said. Gotcha. But yeah, I mean, he's an amazing guy. Like, he's just, and we get along really well. We have similar interests and stuff, but he's just, he not only was on time, he was ahead of deadlines. He colored the work as well. I mean, that's all him. So, I mean, he's just, I mean, that, yeah, that was an amazing collaborative process. So I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, if this Kickstarter does well, to, we have two more issues planned, so.
Oh, great, great. So it's interesting to me because Aldous Spark was listed as number one, and then there wasn't, or at least that I'm aware of, maybe I missed it in my email. Sometimes stuff goes to spam and stuff like that, but there wasn't necessarily like a follow-up. Why didn't you stick with Aldous Spark, and why did you decide to do this new project?
So actually, Aldous Spark 2, Volume 2 is in production. We're probably about, well, let's see. So
awesome.
It's going to be longer. So the Volume 1 was 48 pages, and then with back matter was like 64, I believe.
Yeah.
But Volume 2 is going to be quite a bit longer. That's actually going to be, I think right now it's like 72 comic pages.
Gotcha.
And then with, you know, back matter, it's going to be longer. And I think we're in the 50s right now in terms of finished art.
Oh, wow.
So it's just because comics take so long to make. And that's something that I've realized doing it. But a lot of it, it takes so long to do. And as a writer, that's, you know, one of the great things is I can work on multiple things at once. But I mean, ideally, I'd like to have, you know, when I get to a point where I'm working on all levels, is to have multiple books come out a year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, so Spark is still definitely going strong. It just gets a longer book. So, it's going to be a nice little graphic novel. So that's still coming along. Laszlo, we just did while that was going. And then, Rumrow, my other book, we're a slight delay on that because the artist, is doing stuff with Marvel.
Oh, wow, great.
Yeah, he's really talented. So while that's going, to keep that brand going as well, I've always wanted...
It was like the Zeppelin thing, right?
Yeah,
there was like,
yeah.
Yeah, I remember that now. Oh, you sent that to me. Did I review that as well? Or I don't remember. Or maybe I just... Oh, I must have come across that somewhere. Okay. The name just popped into my head, and I was like, that's the thing with, like, the guy, and there's a Zeppelin, and there's, like, a gunfight, and yeah. Tell people about Rum Row, too, because that was a good book, too.
So that's, I'm a history nerd.
Sure.
And I love, like, the pulpy kind of adventure stuff. But that's basically when Prohibition happened in America in the 20s, our story takes place in New York, and when Prohibition hits, all the bootleggers and patrons alike take to the skies of New York in these big dirigible speakeasies. And so it's like gangsters, biplanes, sky gangs, all this stuff above New York. And it's basically allowed to exist because it makes the city so much money. And they're kind of out. Because it was based on a real historical thing called Rum Row, which the boats would stay just outside the maritime limit.
Yeah,
so
the
lifeguard couldn't.
Coast Guard.
Coast Guards couldn't go out there and get them, but they were going out there with speedboats, and they were having little parties, and there was gangsters stealing the booze out. And I was like, that would be a TV show in itself. You know, I thought that was a cool concept, but I was like, let's just throw it in the air. You know, I love airships and stuff, so that was kind of a easy in for me.
Yeah, you've got three really good books out there. I mean, can people, besides Laszlo, which, you know, the Kickstarter should be up now, and everyone should go to Kickstarter and look up Laszlo, which is spelled Lazlo, and Kale, Cale, and that's how you'll probably find it on Kickstarter, right?
Right.
But how can people get Rum Row and Aldous Spark? Because those are two really good books as well. Can they still get them from you, or the PDFs, or physical copies?
So we can get physical copies on the site, and then on our website. And then we have the digital stuff as well. It's cheaper. It's pretty cheap to get the digital stuff on our site, but you can also get it on Comixology. I don't care where you get it. So it's whoever wants to read it.
Where's your site? What's the site URL?
It's grenadefight.net.
Grenadefight?
Yeah, that was sort of a joke name for our little imprint, and it just kind of stuck, and then so we're like, well, let's just keep it Grenade Fight.
Oh, that's great. That's really funny. Well, so those are two good books that I recommend, but let's talk about Laszlo. So the book is called The Bawdy Tales of Laszlo Kale, and this thing is, I mean, it's funny because when you sent me the material, I expected something visually more sort of in the line of like Aldous Spark, right? But, and it's funny that you say, oh, this is sort of like the more adult-oriented book, which it is because there's sexuality and stuff in there. But the style is very sort of, for lack of a better term, it's a lot of brushwork. It's like a lot of like curvy lines and stuff like that. It's very sort of cartoony or animation style, in my opinion. What did you, I mean, Rumro, yeah, that's different than Aldous Spark visually, but this seems like a really big departure. Like, how did you settle on this style, or like when you found the artist, were you like, this is my guy? Like, how did that sort of like manifest itself? Because it is a different looking book than anything that you've done before.
Yeah, it's funny because I was following Goran on Twitter, and he's one of those guys that has 20 different styles, and the style that I actually reached out to him for was something totally different than the style that you see in the book.
Yeah.
And then I pitched him the concept, sent him the script, and he sent me a handful of character concepts, and I opened my inbox and I was like, what is this? Like, but then I was looking at it and I was like, this makes so much sense because it's definitely cartoony style, but
it's also very European too, don't you think? European comics, like,
right, which is and that's something that we were really going for. Like, I was reading a lot of humanoids type stuff on Comixology, and I was buying those giant hardcovers.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of like European comics in general, so he kind of took that and just kind of transformed it and had, so it really has that style. And then the fact that the story takes place in Paris, and it's got like kind of a humorous bend to all the art. I just thought it was like, it went perfectly with the story.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, it fits the tone of the story, completely, but it's so funny because I expected visually something completely different. And when I got the material, I was like, oh, wait a minute. And it was like very intriguing to me. I was like, oh, he's working with somebody else, you know? And, you know, once I started reading it, I can see why the sort of visual, look fits the tone of the book. But why don't you talk a little bit about what the book is? I mean, because there's some really great concepts in here. I mean, it is sort of like set in the future. You sort of went a little bit like, who do I want to compare it to? Sort of like Grant Morrison on this one, I think.
It's out there. I am a little bit nervous because it's, I would say my previous two books are pretty straight up pulp adventure, kind of in the historical bend. And so this is like a futuristic sci-fi, lots of weird concepts, but hopefully still really fun and action-packed and with some humor thrown in. But the basic premise of the story is there's an ex-gigolo turned art dealer who has to track down Paris's most notorious gangster's stolen painting. And kind of shenanigans ensue after that. And then he's in Paris, which Paris recently had an interdimensional time bomb blow up by time terrorists that wanted to suck the city into the ether. But instead, it created this weird kind of wormhole where these different periods of time could cohabit at the same time. And instead of being just chaos like you think it would be, it worked actually out really well, and people were just kind of enjoying this weird city.
Yeah, like Paris has become like this international, not that it wasn't already, but it's sort of like this international hub of tourism, because it's the place to go to experience this like sort of like nexus of all dimensions and times, like with different weird technologies and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's like dinosaurs walking around, there's samurai and like medieval knights, you know, I mean, it's like, all, yeah, it's all over. There's flying cars. I mean, yeah, it's really a hodgepodge of everything.
Yeah, I mean, visually, it's funny to me. Well, not funny. Funny, well, I don't know what the word I would be looking for exactly is. But have you ever heard of a book called Rocketo? Or I don't know, Rocketo?
I haven't, but I know.
Well, the artist is Frank Espinoza. You should look it up. It's beautiful, but it's like brushwork like this. And it's more like sort of a Flash Gordon, sort of a, yeah, Buck Rogers sort of feel to it than this is. But the style of this, which your artist's work is a bit more sort of, what's the word I want to use? The term that comes to my mind is more concrete. Like Rocketo is, the brushwork is very loose and fast and like stuff like that. But it reminded me a lot of that. And also, again, like a lot of European graphic novels, which, you know, there are some that, you know, European graphic novels that are like super beautifully detailed. And then there are others that, you know, tend to use line work for maximum effect, you know, but aren't super detailed. I mean, yours, this Laszlo is sort of like a combination of both, because I go through like all the pages and I'm looking at the panels and I'm like, there's a panel here where there's like a dolphin floating in like a like a tub, yeah, like in the city, and another building is shaped like a cactus, and then here's another panel and there's like a giraffe, and then like it's very interesting. It seems like a lot of like visual thought like went into like what he's doing. Did you sit down with him and discuss like the look of the world or how you wanted it to look, or is did he just mostly come out of this like outside of his head? I mean, it seems like reminiscent of like a really odd like Salvador Dali painting.
Well, yeah, and that's
not
awesome
that there's a normal Salvador Dali painting, right? But you know what I mean.
Right. No. And I mean, I'm glad to hear that it's feels like that, because we were definitely wanted to go for yeah, like the city is kind of really just like this mix of things, and like there's a hallucinogenic drug in the book. It's not a huge spoiler. It's just that people can relive their most nostalgic moments, and we play with art styles in that too, because the book itself is about getting back a painting and art. And so Gorn was playing with a lot of different art styles and influences, and so those slip, you know, into the world and the book. But just in terms of like, yeah, have it be visually interesting, and I mean, because it is, you know, so many worlds have access to the city, we wanted to have a lot of different things in there that, yeah, that would make sense with that theme. But I mean, with the script, I might have a few things here or there. But it was very much like a back and forth, you know, he would do the layouts, we would kind of look at it, and, you know, I'd have an idea and he'd have an idea, and it's almost like we were kind of trying to top each other. And then I think just by the end, you look at the airport, I forget what page it is off the top of my head, but the airport has all these different kinds of flying vehicles, right? Even like a pterodactyl, because it's just all the different time periods. And so he just really went crazy with that and kind of threw in a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting, because to me it seems like this would sort of be like an artist's wet dream. It's like, oh, there's like a nexus of all realities and I can just go crazy, or it could be a dream or a nightmare. Like, how did he sort of, because then you could just like go totally out of control and not rein yourself in. Like, how were you sort of able to sort of, or how was he able to sort of balance with your instruction? Like, don't go too crazy. We want it to look like it's an actual, you know, solid breathing, like living existence as well, right? Like,
well, no, yeah, totally. That's a good, great point, because at the same time, we want it to be visually interesting, but we want you to be able to follow the story and not be so distracted or confused. So we try to find that balance. And when we really ramp it up, it's in panels where it doesn't matter as much. Like the airport one you know, example I used where it's like, or there's like that double page spread, where we want to see the city, from, you know, like a high up vantage point. And so that
I just found the airport page, and I think there's like an even a little enterprise, like in looking like, you know, sort of in the, anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. So we just like, we try to pick our moments. And then when we had that moment, we'd really try to hit it home.
Yeah.
You know, but like when there's quite, you know, when it just character moments, cause there's still quite a few panels too, where it's just like two characters in a panel, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you've funded like your past two Kickstarters. I mean, is this generally how your publication strategy works? I mean, are you just going through Comixology and Kickstarter? I mean, you're printing out physical books. Are you going to conventions? That sort of thing. Like, how is your strategy working? Because, I mean, you are an independent publisher. How are you getting your books out there to people?
And that's the first part of my trying to make comics thing has just been making comics. Because that was such a hard part. I mean, to make the first Rum Row was my first book, and that came out in 2014.
Yeah.
And that took 2.5 years to make a 24-page comic.
Yeah.
And then it was almost three years or so before the next one came out.
Yeah.
Oh,
I feel you. I mean, I worked on a book with a friend of mine. His name is David Schrader, and it's called Baby Badass. And it took him for part of it was me, but it took him forever to finally get it out. And I have like a web comic called The Periwinkle Puss that like pages come out like once a month. So I totally understand your pain.
Those are both awesome names, by the way.
Great.
but it's just, it's so hard just because, like, I remember with Rum Row, I mean, just think, like, he there was literally earthquakes by his house happening in Italy, because that's where he's from.
Oh, wow, really?
And it was like that kind of stuff. And then, you know.
That seems really drastic. That's more than your usual, like, I got to go take care of my kid. I can't draw now. you know what I mean?
It's like whatever forces or God or whatever you believe in, I felt like did not want us to make that book. Yeah. It was just, you know, I mean, like I said, like he's doing the Marvel stuff now, which is, that's awesome. I'm 100% behind that. And we're actually doing like an anthology. To kind of keep that brand going, and because there's a lot of stuff that we don't get to play with in the main series that we'll get to play with in the, because it's a big world, so that anthology will let us play, and then we can kind of keep making Rum Row books. But yeah, there's just stuff happens. Like my job I had before this, I had a very 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 small salary, so it was like funding comic books that can cost $5,000 or $6,000 to make a single issue.
Yeah.
Making that on what I was making was just not, you know, I had to do it really slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Spark would just, you know, every artist works at their own pace, and you know, it's just a lot of things are going. So my goal this whole time has just been to make product, just to have enough to sell at a show. Because I mean, I don't know if you've experienced this, but if you excel at con, like if you just have a single floppy issue for your whole table, I'm not saying that that's not successful and that I haven't seen people be successful at that, but it's not the easiest sell, I think, if you have just one single issue.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to have a trade or something out. So until we had Spark out, which is like, the print edition is like this really nice oversized, like almost European album. Like it's a big hardcover. And so that's been a cool thing to have, but I'm just now started really doing shows. I mean, so this next year we have 3 or 4 lined up. But it's, yeah, I mean, like my co-writer with Spark, our day jobs are just kind of nonstop, and then the creating and balancing family and everything else, as you know, you got a lot of million things going on too. It's just hard to get the stuff out. But audience building and getting the word out and getting the books out has been something that I've really been trying to work on the last, you know, 4 or 5 months, because it's something that I realize, okay, I got the books now, and I'm happy with how they look, but you got to get them out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once you had sort of like, I mean, Rum Row is a really good book, but Aldous Spark is definitely the one. Not to make comparisons between the two projects, I mean, it's not fair, but I mean, there's definitely sort of a pedigree around Aldous Spark where I was like, visually, where I was like, oh my gosh, like this is just, beautifully detailed. There haven't been any publishers like interested in sort of like picking that up and publishing it for you, or like helping you publish it? Or I mean, I know you had said like you go to conventions and you're sort of like pitching your project sort of like when you have a script or your pitch package or whatever it is that you hand off to publishers, because I've never done that. I mean, I've never had the stomach for it. But like if you have your hardcover volume and you take it to, say, Dark Horse or IDW or Image or, Action Lab or whatever, publisher will look at it. There's nobody that's been, have you done that? Or is that something that you're just not interested in doing? You just want to keep self-publishing?
I mean, at some point I would like, I haven't pitched either any of the three projects. Honestly, that I just haven't pitched them.
Oh, wow.
When I first started and I was doing all the pitching and stuff, I just got sick of doing 5-page stories, and I was like, screw it, I'm just going to make complete something. Yeah. And so that was the biggest part. And then now it's like, okay, now get a little something where we can sell. But I mean, I'd be open to pitching. I don't know if Peter, the co-writer of Spark, actually wrote a Joker story for Batman Anthology a couple years ago.
Oh, cool.
So he knew a couple people, but nothing, that we could kind of pitch stuff by, but we really didn't pursue a ton just because, and I know, we got steampunk isn't the biggest thing, which I don't know. I think it's like people that love
it. It seems like there's definitely a subset out there that.
Yeah, there's a subset.
Aren't there like steampunk cons? You should just take it to those.
Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, there's definitely a thing. But I remember we talked to somebody briefly and kind of got brushed off for that. But yeah, I mean, we haven't done haven't done a whole lot of pitching at all. Just real tiny. Tiny talks here and there, but nothing. And it's something that I need to do, just get better at pitching, because that's a skill that you have to have. And
sure.
I haven't done it in years. And
or just submitting via the internet, don't you think? Like just like looking at whatever their submission guidelines are and being like, I've got this kick-ass book, like Image or, whatever, Alterna Press or, whatever books or companies are out there. Because, I mean, looking at Laszlo and looking at the other stuff you've done, I mean, this is quality stuff. This isn't like, sometimes you get an indie book and it's like, okay, all right, whatever. It's either the art is really good and the story's terrible, or the art is terrible, the story's, or both, or what I'm saying? Sometimes being a fan of or wanting to support indie books can be a little trying, when you're a fan, because I don't know if you've listened to any of my other interviews beyond the last one that I did, but the thing of it is like when I go to conventions, I go crazy and I'll just buy like indie books sometimes. Like I'll head down Artist Alley and I'll be like, you got a book? Give it to me. You know what I mean? Like I'm interested in supporting indie artists, and then I just blow all my cash and I feel guilty about it because then sometimes, the book, I may not even look at it, and then I will get home and be like, okay. But your stuff is not like that. Like anything that I've read from you is consistently quality and in my mind good enough to be published by at the very least like an indie publisher like IDW or Boom or Image or whatever, so in this is me sort of giving you guys a pep talk on my podcast, but I feel strongly about it in the fact that I've been pleasantly surprised by everything you've sent me.
Well, I just want to say really that means a lot. I appreciate that, because making indie books, you can sometimes feel like you're in a cave making it for yourself. But no, so I mean that's huge, and I appreciate that a lot. I like I said, I'm trying to. It's something that I think we need to do in terms of that, and audience building are things that I need to work on a lot. Because yeah, it's just the main goal and that's been moving the train and fueling us was just make the books. Yeah. And just because I mean, there's so many. Just for Spark, for example, that was an oversized book, right? So I thought, okay, let's just make our story. And in the end, when we're going to print it, we just, hey, make it bigger. No, that's not how it works at all. there's all kinds of things with the bleeds and ratios and all that. So there's that kind of stuff. I mean, every single book, there's been something a little bit there's always – I don't – get too inside baseball, but there's always something that just happens, and I just learned that I have so much to learn. So it's like it's just been a good, you know, training course how to make comics and make comics by yourself and managing a product, you know, a project, and there's just so many plates to spin. It's been kind of just trial by fire type deal. Sure.
Yeah, I totally understand that. But let me ask you this. Like, so to write and create your own comics, were you writing other things before you sort of got into comics? Were you like trying to get into screenplays or television or that sort of thing? Or were you just one day like, I'm going to write comic books and here we go, that sort of thing? And also, like, if you were sort of new to writing comics, what did you read up on or study to sort of get you to the point of where you're actually making decent comic book stories? Does that make sense?
So originally, kind of at the same time that I was really shotgunning all those comics, I was starting to dabble in, because in college I did just like 2 years in college, I was doing stand-up and sketch and improv. So I was writing a lot of stuff like that, like sketches and different, and trying to write screenplays and different stuff. So I started that way and started dabbling with comics just because I loved them so much. And I was just curious how making one would be. And there, you know, there was, and when I was listening to interviews there's a lot of guys that would do a similar format for scripting screenplays that they would for comics, almost using the Final Draft software and stuff like that. So I was kind of just dabbling. And then as college winded down, I got way more into the writing the comics and way less into the other stuff. So it started as something completely different. And then I just, you know, tried to listen to as many interviews as I could. I read, every How to Make Comics books that I, you know, get my hands on, trying to write as much as possible, reading stuff like, writing books like Robert McKee's story, and, just trying to cram in as much stuff as I can. Cause I didn't have any training. You're just kind of learning by doing, you know?
Yeah. No, I had a friend who gave me Robert McKee's story, and I tried to read it. And when I first moved to LA, I was an actor, and you know, reading screenplays and stuff like that, and trying to break into that, and working in a lot of like really low budget, independent, terrible things, not porn, but like I have friends who are into screenwriting and stuff like that, and somebody gave me story once, and I know it's like this Bible of how to like craft a story, but I just started reading it, and in my own opinion, and I do need to read it just for knowledge's sake. But it was just so self-referential of the writing process and of like movies and film, and it can uplift you and blah 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 and entertainment, and I was just like, oh, I just too jaded for that, you know what I mean? I was just like, I can't. But it is a book I should really, really, really read. But that's great. Yeah, so you just dove into like an education in writing on your own, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and it just. And luckily, and just to say another thing about indie comics. I'm small time, and I'm really trying to get better at being on social media and being more active and at conventions and all that stuff. But the people that I have met in the process, through social media or in person, in the small indie comics world, have been like amazing. Because going back to, and I'm sure you got this too, doing acting and stuff, but doing stand up, it was very like every man for himself. Screw you. We're very clicky. Kind of like, oh, how'd he get that job? Why does he have that? You know, very much like that kind of sketch. I was more of a family, and I liked sketch a lot. But with the comics community, it's very much like, I mean, unless you're a jerk, and I know there's been a couple people that are kind of pompous, but for the most part, people are ridiculously nice and will go out of your way. Out of their way to help or read a script or bounce an idea off someone, or, oh, you need a new colorist? Check this guy out, or this girl out, or this designer's amazing. And I mean, there's this, I've just experienced so much of that, and everybody's so nice with their time. You know, everybody's got a family, everybody's got a day job, and just the fact that they do that is just, I don't know. That's been a huge help too, trying to, you know, make this work.
Yeah, it's funny. I think that even, you know, what you were saying before, like the entertainment community, there is a lot of like that whole, like everyone's out for themselves and stuff. But in my experience in comics or whatever, even in acting, it's like I've had the pleasure of meeting so many wonderful people that it's just like, yeah, no, that's all BS. You know what I mean? I mean, I know that there are definitely self-serving people in Hollywood or whatever, but in my experience, and definitely just running a podcast where I'm able to get somebody to come on for an hour, you know, and talk to me about what they're doing, you know, I mean, that alone speaks, you know, tons to the generosity of the community, you know what I'm saying? Because this podcast itself is not The Nerdist, or it is not Kevin Smith, or it is, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
My podcast for you should be a stepping stone to greater things. You know what I mean?
Now,
getting on that Nerdist thing or whatever. But no. You know what I'm saying? Not to downplay myself. But my point is that, you know, I've definitely experienced what you've experienced as well, where it seems like the comics community is full of very nice and very generous people as well.
Yeah, it's refreshing because, you know, like you're spending all your time and money going to these conventions, and you spend every week you're putting episodes together, and it's a lot of work on top of all your other commitments.
Yeah.
So the fact that people are, you know, cheering you on and supporting you and doing, you know, it's like that's all. It kind of makes it a little bit easier when things can be frustrating or taking too long, or things, you know, don't go exactly as you'd like them to, you know, go, that support network helps a lot.
Cool. So the Kickstarter starts on Tuesday, July 10th. By the time this goes up, it's going to be July 11th. But people should go to Kickstarter and check, just look up, I would say, right, what I had said before, right? Laszlo Kale?
Yeah, I can't imagine there being a lot of Laszlo projects.
Yeah, I don't know. But as of right now, this is just for the first issue. And then how far are you into the second and third? You said it's going to be a 3-issue miniseries?
Yeah, so this first issue is oversized. So the plan is to do 2 more oversized issues. So even though it's only 3 issues, they're going to be pretty meaty issues. And then we'll have a nice trade when it's all collected.
Yeah,
but I haven't started writing 2 and 3, but I have outlines of how I want 2 and 3 to go.
We better get on that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, fingers crossed it gets funded and people dig it, and then we'll make some more. So that's kind of the plan. And then I just wanted to mention this too. We actually have a Jim Rugg variant cover.
Oh, cool.
Which I don't know. Did I not send that to you?
I don't know.
Oh,
I don't think so.
I gotta say but talk about nice guys in the, he's, you know, he had a million commissions and he's, you know, still somehow fitted in before our Kickstarter went. So he's another example of just a class act, awesome guy in that cover. That was kind of an art dream because I'm a big fan of his, and the fact that he could draw our character was like, blown away.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you were able to come on to my podcast. I really do appreciate you keeping me on your mailing list. I really did enjoy this book. It is called The Body Tales of Laszlo Kale, and it is going to be on Kickstarter as of the date that this podcast goes up. I think, you know, it's funny because you contacted me to write a review, and I really haven't been writing reviews lately. I've just been so busy at work and working on sort of like my own little comics project and stuff like that. But hopefully it's helpful to even just, because I was like, just come on the podcast. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously you've got some quality product, and, you know, what would happen is I would write a review, a good review, and then it would be like, oh, just come on the podcast. So I was just like, let's skip a step and come on the podcast. I'll tell everyone how great this book is, because it is great. It's a fun book. It's very different. It's energetic. It's lively. It's eccentric. It's not your sort of like typical superhero adventure comic, but it's something that's different, and I think that the comics community needs that, and I loved it, and so I appreciate you taking the time to send it to me, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on my podcast, and I just hope that the Kickstarter goes really well, because it deserves to, and I would love to see how far you can take this story, you know?
Well, thank you so much, and for making time out of your day to have me on here. So that's and taking time to read the books, and especially when you get sent stuff all the time and you don't know me from Adam, and check out the stuff and have me on here is huge. So I all the stuff right back at you. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. And, you know, you've earned the spot because I think that your stuff is really good and you should just keep going and be encouraged. And, you know, I mean, not only are you a good writer, but you've also got really good taste in who you collaborate with, because everything looks very professional. I mean, there's not one thing here that says like low budget indie. So you should be proud of yourself, and anyone who's out there, definitely go to Kickstarter. I probably keep mispronouncing the name, but it's Laszlo Kale, The Body Tales of Laszlo Kale. And definitely, what was the website again? It's, what was it?
Grenadefight.net.
Grenadefight.net. And they can also get this Aldous Spark on Comixology, correct?
Yeah, Comixology, Rumro, and Spark are on there. So
yeah, that, definitely check out those books. Those have been some really great indie books that I've read. Whenever you've forwarded them to me, and I've had the chance to read them, I'm impressed. So I really do wish you all the luck in the world. And I can't imagine that you're not going to find a home at a publisher for some of this stuff or other stuff, because you definitely are putting some good work out there and putting an effort into it. So I can't imagine that you're not going to end up, you know, with one of these books somewhere at like a really good publisher. So,
well, fingers crossed, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for...
All right. Well, I have had Andrew Maxwell on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. Definitely support his Kickstarter. Thank you for listening. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. My name is once again Christian Horn. And thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Bye.
Fanboy.com.